We can't start the show now. We're talking about armadillos. Oh. It's 7 p.m. Thursday, and this is All About Wine. With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes. We're going to finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with the France. So we're continuing with France. Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about is the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport Mass.
Haverhill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com. In Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery. New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93 at the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebock Winery.
We are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Blackhead Lake Winery, and we're located at Cushu Park in Montana.
Mammoth Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine. So, and then when the armadillo came around the other side, this armadillo came. Huh? Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh. We had the short opening that time. I was going to run out to the other room, but hey, I had to hurry back.
It's Thursday, 7 p.m.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. There you go.
Hey, I'm ready.
Yeah, the armadillos all over the place. I mean, they are just like everywhere, digging into everything. And but University of Florida has a great site that tells about them and all that. And I think on the winery Facebook page, I'm going to put a link to that because they drove me nuts today. So,
Interesting.
All welcome right. to All About Wine.
Yeah, and we have a pretty good packed show tonight. No guests apparently scheduled for tonight. And if you are interested in getting on the show, you can contact us, area code 646-727-3235, but only during this broadcast. Otherwise, if we're not broadcasting, you're listening to the archive and you want to contact us, email allaboutwine101@gmail.com. That's allaboutwine101@gmail.com when we're not on the air or even when we're on the air. But that's 24/7, so that's any time.
Yeah, any time. And get a hold of us
tonight.
If you want to be a guest, get a hold of us. If you know somebody who would be a good guest, we've hooked up a lot of guests just from people who say, oh, they would be good. And so,
Very good. Referrals are always welcome.
Always welcome. So we got a few things to talk about tonight. We started the Tobacco and Trade Bureau last week, Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau. It's government. U.S. government program that regulates wine. We're going to continue with that tonight. But before we continue with that, we got a few other things to hit on quickly here. Number one, I have to tell you about this. The United States produces and imports so many wines at so many price points and so much popularity that the drinking in this country has taken off, has soared. We are growing by leaps and bounds on wine consumption. And the Vin Expo and International Wine and Spirit Research recently announced that we are now number one worldwide. So we are, there it is. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
All right.
That's enough. We are number one worldwide in consumption and overall sales. The United States leads the world. Number two, not France, but Italy. Number three is France. Number four, Germany. And number five, the United Kingdom. So this is the latest thing. The way that China is growing, then I don't know. They may be starting to move up that list pretty soon here. But we are number one when it comes to wine consumption and wine sales. So that's pretty good stat for us, I think, there. And that's why there's so many different stores and people and so many wineries and all that. And that's why this show does so well, because there are so many of them out there. So many different people that are interested in wine and all that. So, but we are number one. Something else I want to, Brettanomyces, Brett is the common term for it. If your winery is affected by Brett, you usually have a problem. I mean, you do have a problem. It could cause the wines to be off just enough that it's not quite right, but you don't know what's wrong with it. Brett is a problem, and they say most wineries are affected or can be affected by Brett, and it's something that you're always having to be careful for. And cleaning helps gets rid of that, and cleaning with all sorts of different things. There's all sorts of stuff out there that is recommended to clean to be sure that you don't have a problem with Brett. I clean so much, and I use two or three different types of things every time I'm bottling and doing anything. I'm so scared of Brett. I've had a problem with Brett a couple of times, and it's horrible because you fight it. But when it comes to the rise of popularity of sours and wild farmhouse ales in the craft realm, much of the credit goes to Brett, or Brettanomyces. It's the formal name is Brettanomyces, or Brett is usually called. It's a wild yeast that brings the funk, if you will, to those Belgian wine or Belgian ales and beers and stuff. Brewers like Russian River, for example, Omegang, Lost Abbey, Deschutes, Stillwater, and hundreds of others actually have all done some pretty award-winning things with Brett, though many of them would probably tell you that the Brett does most of the work and not them. It's a strain that most fermented beverages in any aspect want to be rid of, want out of their drinks, because it's contaminating and it makes it off. But these brewers, these beer brewers now, are using Brett to their advantage to bring out a unique taste and smell in their brews. So I wanted to bring that up simply because in the wine industry, Brett, if you are infected with Brett during the any phase of it, not good. It's really a problem. But it seems like some of these breweries, these beer breweries, are embracing the Brett. If you've listened to any past episodes, and if you've paid any attention to some of the stuff I talked about in the past about blogging and bloggers and stuff like that, you probably realize that one of my favorite bloggers is Joy of Wine. She has been doing it for quite some time. I've quoted her quite a bit on different things over the times that we've been on the program and talked about different things and all that. And her name's Joy Neighbors, and she does a great job. I enjoy her blogs simply because they're pretty simple, they're pretty easy. They are full of pictures. She always puts a bunch of pictures in there, and she's knowledgeable. She does a nice job on it. I'm going to have to get a hold of her. I've got her email address, and I'm going to get a hold of her and see if we can't get her on as a guest. I would love to have her on as a guest. She is, like I say, very knowledgeable, and she does a great job. If you want to check out her website, or her blog site, I should say. It's Joy's Joy of Wine, J-O-Y-S-J-O-Y-O-F, Joy's Joy of Wine, W-I-N-E, .blogspot.com. And you can get to it. She has a lot of archives in there, a lot of different things. But I've always enjoyed reading some of the stuff that she has and talking about it and all that. She also has a Twitter account that she always is clicking, you know, popping out different things. She doesn't send out 20 or 30 tweets a day, but she does keep you informed of what she's doing. The latest blog that just came out yesterday, as a matter of fact, the 10th yesterday, was about her serving as a judge in the Finger Lakes International Wine Competition. I was invited, the winery was invited to be a participant in the Finger Lakes Wine Competition. Like I said, we normally don't do competitions, so I politely refused, but it is one of the biggest in the country. I think it's like the second largest right now. It's really jumped up there and became very large. But she wrote this, her latest blog, on being a judge there. And I want to go through this. I want to, you know, basically read some stuff to you about this and tell you a little stuff. I won't cover everything on this. But again, if you want to see the whole thing, joysjoyofwine.blogspot.com. This is the 13th Annual Finger Lakes International Wine Competition. If you want to check it out, it's www.fliwc.com. F-L-I-W-C, Finger Lakes International Wine Competition. And it was held March 23rd and 24th in Rochester, New York. Over 880 wineries received medals during the two-day competition. It was a big event, and it always is, and it's growing every year. This the Finger Lakes International Wine Competition, or FLIWC, is a relatively new competition as opposed to a lot of them that's been around for a long time. This came about by a suggestion from Peter Parts. He is a member of the Camp Good Days and Special Times Board. He was looking for a way to raise money. He heard about California wine auctions and how it raised money, and so he decided to do a wine competition auction to raise money in the Finger Lakes area. And so he set it up and started to do it. It is now the largest North American wine competition held for and by a charity. Camp Good Days and Special Times, and if you want to check that out, it's www.campgooddays, all one word, CampGooddays.org. It is a not-for-profit organization that provides programs free of charge to children and their families who are battling cancer. So it is a phenomenal organization that he set up for this. And the camp is, well, here says over 43,000 campers from 22 states and 28 foreign countries have attended the camp since 1979. And 100% of all the proceeds from the FLIWC and the resulting auction, wine auction dinner, go to benefit the Camp Good Day. So it's a great cause. Absolutely, this is a phenomenal cause. The Finger Lakes International Wine Competition had over 3,500 wines entered this year, a new record. They came from all the 50 states, four Canadian provinces, and 20 different countries. Like I said earlier, the second largest in the United States. 68 wine judges from 17 states and over 14 countries were present. These included Europe, South Africa, Czech Republic, Slovenia, Israel, Argentina. So it's brought people in from everywhere. It's quite a thing. The judges had a variety of backgrounds, winemakers, sommeliers, enologists, importers, retailers, wine writers, bloggers, educators, consultants. A little bit of everything was their qualifications for being a judge. One of the people who was a judge was George Tabor. George Tabor, a little aside here, I don't know if you know George Tabor. George Tabor was the man who wrote the story in Time magazine about the Paris wine competition back in May 1976. That was the competition where a California Chardonnay and a California Cabernet took first place over a lot of the French wines that were entering the competition. First time it ever happened. The French were, to say the least, infuriated, quite perturbed that the two California wineries won, and that they actually won by creating better wines than the French, who have been doing it for many, many years. And these, you know, California, little upstart California, is entering and winning top prize on it. George Tabor was the only journalist who was covering that wine competition, and his results actually put California wine on the stage, put the U.S. wine market on the world stage. It was something that opened up the eyes of people around the world. If you've seen the movie Bottle Shock, that is based on that competition and what happened there, and loosely. Again, it's a movie, it's Hollywood, but it's a good movie, and it tells you a lot about it and all that and how it come about and all. But he also, George Tabor, was also one of the judges at this, as were many other, you know, prominent names in the wine industry and all that, and people who have been involved with it for years. The judging took place, she writes, in one large room. Participants at each table discussed the wines after each judge had made a decision. Wines were judged in a double-blind flight, which means that the judges did not see the brand of wine or know where it came from, which is the only logical way to be able to do it. I mean, when you think about it, each wine was judged on its own merit, not by comparison to the other wines in the flight, which again is really the only way to do it. Every judge received a scoring sheet with the wine's code number listed and the varietal of the wine. And so they, you know, they actually, you know, told them what the varietal is, you know, what they were looking for, and if it met up to the varietal characteristics or not, which probably is, again, one of the best ways to do it, because without knowing the varietal, you start saying, wait a minute, what is this? And you don't know if it's a varietal characteristic or not. So it's a good way. Judging criteria for each wine included the evaluation of its appearance, aroma, balance, varietal character, and finish. Each wine was judged for what it was at the time of the judging, not for how it might evolve and what it could become at a later time, which is an important factor here. If you're submitting a wine that's very young that will be great after 10 years, then keep it for 10 years and submit it. Don't submit it now and say, okay, this is going to get better after 10 years. All wines were served in individual crystal stemware in flights of 8. Of the medals given this year, 100 wines received double gold medals. This means like that every judge judging that wine gave it a gold medal. Over 170 wines received gold medals. Just over 1,250 were given silver medals, and over 1,360 wines received bronze medals. So there was a lot of awards handed out. Once the judging was completed, a select panel reviewed the winners in the Cabernet Sauvignon, Chardonnay, Riesling, and ice wine categories. From these, the best of the best was decided on. Sounds like the Westminster Abbey Dog Show. The best of the best this year in the Cabernet Sauvignon was Merriam Vineyards of California. And if you want to check that out, merriamvineyards.com, just merriamvineyards.com. Best Chardonnay, Bogle Vineyards of California. That is also BOGLE winery.com. Bogle Winery Best.com. Best Riesling, and this is interesting, Chateau Fontaine of Michigan. And their website is Chateau Fontaine, ChateauFontaine.com. ChateauFontaine.com won the Best Riesling, the best of the best, and then the Best Ice Wine. And this is interesting too, is, and I'm going to pronounce this wrong because it's from the Czech Republic, Zvin Nemo, it's spelled Z-N-O-V-I-N, then Z-N-O-J-M-O. Zvin Nemo might be the way you pronounce it, I don't know. But that was the Best Ice Wine. So, wow, that, you know, considering this was held in the Finger Lakes areas and all the ice wines that are done up in that area, that is amazing. That website for Zvin Nemo is znovin.cz for, I'm sure, Czech Republic. So if you want to check that out. This was, those were the top ones, the best of the best. And it surprised me when I saw that Czech Republic Ice Wine won. That's great. I'm not criticizing. I'm just shocked that they didn't give something to the all the ice wines out of New York there. The competition and the show and everything else required over 150 volunteers. They did all the work. They helped set up everything. They helped keep everything clean. They helped label and mark everything and help keep everything straight and all that. And they basically, from Enjoy said here, the volunteers were the ones that was the backbone of the competition and everything, supplying the judges with napkins and water and crackers and spit cups and buckets and washing the glasses and preparing new flights and doing all this both days. When the judging was over and the dinner was held that evening, dinner was held on May 4th, a Saturday evening, at the Rochester Plaza and Hotel and Conference Center in Rochester, New York. Tickets were $150 per person. All proceeds also Camp Good Days and Special Times. So a great, great cause again there. She says that it was a great event, a great time. A lot of people showed up. There was a lot of stuff to see and do, and she had a wonderful time doing it. So, Joy, thanks for your blog here. I will. I'm going to have to get a hold of Joy and talk to her. I see if she can't come on the program, because that would be fun to get her on the program. We'll see if we can't get a hold of her in the future here. We've got some stuff to talk about on DTB. I don't want to do that. No. Tried to close that website of Joy's there, and it said, do you want to close all of them? And no, I don't, because I've got my other ones coming up here. TTV. A couple of things I want to talk about here. This prohibited practices. Just a quick thing I want to run through this, because this is interesting here. The advertisement of wine shall not contain any statement that is false or untrue in any material particular or that, irrespective of falsity, directly or by ambiguity, omission, or inference, or by the addition of irrelevant scientific or technical matter, tends to create a misleading impression. So, you know, if it says this is good for your health, they can't say that, because it's not something that's allowed on the labels. So all these things you see on the label, again, we've talked about this before, what is allowed and what isn't allowed. Any statement, design, device, representation, which relates to alcohol content or which tends to create the impression that a wine contains the distilled spirits, is comparable to a distilled spirit, or has intoxicating qualities, cannot be on the label, which I thought that was odd, but statements inconsistent with labeling, you've got to be careful with what you're writing. I mean, all this stuff is laid out here word for word, and what you can put, statement, here's something too, statement of bottling dates. Now, and I'm reading this up now, because if you start looking at some bottles, new rules and regulations in this country that started a few years ago, it's basically, the reason for that is so that you can trace stuff back to its origin. A reason this came in is because of a lot of the salmonella scares that we've been having over the years, the past few years. And there was problems tracing back and different foods and stuff like that. So if you are a certain size winery, you have to keep track of everything. And I mean everything, where it came from, so you can trace it back. If you walk into a store, you pick up a bottle of wine, you open that bottle of wine, and it makes you deathly ill, and you are contaminated with something, then the winery has to be able to show all aspects of how that wine came to be in that bottle in the store. What I mean is, it has to show where the bottles came from, it has to show where the corks came from, and it has to show the capsules, it has to show every step of the wine, it has to show all this stuff. And then the bottles have to go back, and the bottles have to show where they've been and what they've been through, and where they originally were made. And the corks have to, you know, trace it. So, you know, everything has to be able to be traced step by step all the way through. And this started, about 5 years ago, I think, and I don't have it right in front of me, but this started about 5 years ago. And one of the things that started at that time, and I thought, oh no, this is going to create us problems, which it hasn't, but a lot of the bottling companies, and the one I get bottles from, a lot of the bottling companies put a date of manufacture on their bottles. Now, if you look real close at the bottom or side or bottom side or stuff like that, you might see the date on a bottle, and it's possible that there could be a date there. And so because there is dates on the bottles, it can be confusing. Oh, let me get out. I just had a pop-up here about my scan, and I can't get out of it. Why is this in the middle of my screen here? Please connect to the internet. I am connected to the internet. There, it finally disappears. So because there is a date on a lot of the bottles, it can get confusing. It can get confusing if you start seeing this date. Is this the date that the wine was bottled? Is this the date that, you know, and people don't think it might be the date the bottle was made, because that's not something that really occurs to them. So here is, this is, again, a line on TTB, and this is from section 4.64, labeled prohibited practices, and subsection 9.2, a subsection D, and it says statement of bottling dates. The statement of any bottling date shall not be deemed to be a representation relative to the age. If such statement appears without due emphasis in the following form, quote, bottled in, and then put in the year, but any other, it's illegal to do that. So, FYI, if you see a date on the bottle, itself, not on the label, but on the bottle itself, that has nothing to do with the wine that's using the bottle that is being dated. because if it was bottled in whatever year, that's the only way that it can be legally put on the bottle. So that's it. So I wanted to bring that up too, because that's something that can be confusing. Rules for advertising wine. You can't do any specific health claims. It is illegal. It goes on to many different paragraphs here and all that, talking about health claims and all. But health claims in general, advertisements may not contain any health-related statement that is untrue, and unless it's been proven, and there's always the debates and stuff about it, so you really can't count on it being proven. So those are, things that you won't find on wine bottles. If you do, then you got to, be a little leery. It's actually illegal. Standards of fill for wine. This is something that everyone, when you get yourself a bottle of wine, it has to be filled to a certain level. We are taxed on the amount of wine that we put in the bottles. Basically, if the wine comes up, say, a half inch from the bottom of the cork, or a half inch or an inch from the screw cap, that's where it's supposed to be. That gives you the 750 milliliters in the bottle. Now, if that wine only contains, and if you buy yourself a bottle of wine, you go home, you pour it into a measuring cup, and it measures 750, then that's what it's supposed to be. If you take a bottle of wine home, you take off the cork or screw cap, and you put that into a measuring cup, and it shows, instead of 750 milliliters, it shows 720 milliliters, then shame on the winery for cheating you. But the government really doesn't care. If you take that bottle of wine and you go home and you pour it into a measuring cup and it measures 770 milliliters, then the government is mad, because we're giving you more wine than what we're paying taxes on. So if we cheat the consumer, it really doesn't bother them. If we cheat them, they get a little upset. So, if you want to start measuring your wines, believe me, we check all the time. So, everything's going to be right at 750 milliliters, give or take maybe a milliliter or two, but it's going to be right there. This is standards fill, except as provided in section B down here. No person engaged in business as a producer, rectifier, blender, importer, or wholesaler of wine, directly, indirectly, or through an affiliate, shall sell or ship or deliver for sale or shipment, or otherwise introduce in interstate or foreign commerce, or receive from interstate or foreign commerce, or remove from customs custody any wine, unless such wine is bottled or packed in the standard wine containers herein described. Now, that's an interesting point. Now, the exceptions are sake and wine packed in containers of 18 liters or more. So these big bottles, if you pack wine in 18 liters, there's no standard. You don't have to liters or more. That's why we can ship wine around in barrels and different things like that. But otherwise, there's standard size for them. It says wine domestically bottled or packed either in or out of customs custody before October 24th, 1943, if the label or the label on the container bears a conspicuous statement of the net contents and the actual capacity of that container is not substantially less than the apparent capacity upon visual examination under ordinary conditions for use or purchase. So that's legal. You can do that. But anything before October 24th, 1943, pretty much out of here now. We're not going to find any of that. The standard wine containers, and this is something that I find interesting. A standard wine container should be made, formed, and filled to meet the following specifications. And these, let me read you these three paragraphs here, because this may apply to all of you out there. The design, it shall be so made and formed as not to mislead the purchaser. Wine containers should be held irrespective of the correctness of the net content specified on the label. They should be held to be so made and formed as to mislead the purchaser if the actual capacity is substantially less than the apparent capacity upon visual examination under ordinary conditions or of the purchase or use. So in other words, when you look at a bottle and it's supposed to be 750 and you start looking at it, it's just a weird shape and everything, be sure you read the contents, because not all wine bottles out there are 750 milliliter. They could be any different ones, and I'll read you the standard ones in a second here. But if it's a weird-shaped bottle or something like that, then, you know, look at it. Look at the contents, because you may say, oh, wow, this is a cool bottle for 750 milliliter, but then you start finding out that the weird bottle starts containing less. And so, you know, buyer beware. Fill, and this is interesting too. It shall be so filled as to contain the quantity of wine specified in any of the standards of fill prescribed. And so it has to be one of the ones prescribed, and I'll get to that again in a second. And then here's the last one. The headspace. It shall be made and filled as to have a headspace not to exceed, or not in excess, of 6% of its total capacity after the closure if the net content of the container is 187 milliliters or more. So 187 liter on up, it cannot exceed, the headspace cannot exceed 6% of the total capacity. And headspace not in excess of 10% of such capacity in the case of all other containers. So, the headspace should be standard, no less than 6% of the capacity. Now, these are the standard fills for wine. These are the ones that are authorized by the U.S. government that falls under the regulations. First one, 3 liters. The 3 liter jugs, you've seen 1.5 liters, 1 liter, 750 milliliters, that's your standard wine, 500 milliliters, 375 milliliters, and that's your half bottle, 187 milliliters, that's your small one, 100 milliliters, and 50 milliliters. So these are the ones that are actually authorized, the authorized standards of fill. And so this is what's authorized in the government. So when you go out there, there's a lot more involved than just picking up a bottle of wine and saying, oh, wow, look, I've got this. It has to be within certain regulations, has to be within certain capacities and sizes and everything else. And it's all to protect the consumer. I mean, basically, all this is out there to protect the consumer. And also, and most of the wine that we're making, most of the bottles we're filling and everything else, the machines that we have pretty much take care of everything. It's not like we have to worry about every bottle of wine that we fill needs to be each one needs to be separately examined and checked and all that, because the machines pretty much take care of everything for us on each step of the way. So it's usually not a problem, and you're going to be within regs and all that. Another thing I want to talk about, and hopefully we'll have guests next week so you won't be bored with this tech talk. I hope you're not bored anyway. This is a section on home winemakers. Now, a lot of people make wine at home. It's done a lot. And a lot of people use these wine stores, wine shops that sell wine boxes, and you can go and you can make it there. There are serious regulations involving those, too. So it's not like you can just go in and do it and just not worry about it and everything's taken care of and, you know, this is wonderful and great. There are regulations for every one of those and how they must be operated and what they're doing. It's referred to as home winemaker centers. And the federal regulations that apply to that, home winemaker centers are classified as places where an individual or a home winemaker pays a fee to use space and equipment to make wine for personal or family use. Although it's referred to as individual making wine for personal or family use as a home winemaker, the wine must be made somewhere other than the individual's residence. Under the following conditions, home winemaker centers do not need to qualify under federal rules as a bonded winery or pay federal excise tax on wine that is produced. So these home winemaker centers, you can set yourself up a home winemaking center, but be sure you follow the rules and regulations for people to come in and all that. And it has to be for their personal consumption. It cannot be for sale or anything. Operators and employees of home winemaker centers may furnish space, equipment, ingredients, bottling supplies, and advice. They may also provide certain assistance to customers, including moving the containers, cleaning, maintenance, and repair of equipment, climate and temperature control, disposal of the waste, and quality control, which, you know, tasting stuff. They may not ferment the juice, filter, or bottle the wine. They might not add ingredients. In other words, yeast. And once you start doing the wine, you have to add the yeast. If anybody's used these home wine making centers, you know how that works. Or they cannot provide physical assistance in producing or bottling the wine. In other words, when you start bottling it, it's your job. It's not theirs. They may not provide non-tax paid wine to customers or prospective customers for sampling or other reasons. Now, that's an important thing there, too. You can't go in there and they can't say, well, this is what we've made before here. You can taste this and see if you want to make it. You can't do that. It's illegal. So some pretty strict rules on that stuff there. Those things are flourishing, though. They are all over the place. The individual may produce without payment of federal excise tax per household up to 100 gallons of wine per calendar year. If there is one adult residing in the household, or 200 gallons if there are two or more adults residing in the household. So you can do up to 200 gallons a year if there's two of you or two or more in there. That's quite a bit, actually. I mean, where's my count? Here it is. 200 gallons. 200 gallons divided by 2.37385 is, well, I was going to do that and it didn't. 200 gallons divided by 2.37. That's 84 and a quarter cases of wine. That's a lot of wine. A year, 84 and a quarter cases. That's quite a bit of wine. So you can do up to 200 gallons in a household a year. May I sell home-produced wine? Here's another section here. May I sell home-produced wine? If you make wine at home, a lot of people do, can you sell it? No. Flat out, simple answer. Under 26 U.S.C. 5042, and that's the code, and the implementing regulations 27 CFR 24.75A, wine produced for personal or family use may never be sold or offered for sale. Only wine produced at a fully qualified bonded wine premises may be sold or offered for sale. So if you make wine at home, you can't sell it. You can give it away. You can give it to everybody you want. Let people taste it. You can give it for present, but you can't sell it. Here's another question. I am a home winemaker, and I'm applying for a permit to operate a winery. Will I be allowed to sell or store my homemade wine at my new bonded wine premises? No. Now, this is something else you need to remember. We've talked to people who are making wine at home, and they've been doing this for a long time, and we've had guests on and stuff like that, and they've been making wine at home, and they're going to open up wineries. And from that, they're going to start doing their winery. And we talked to them quite a bit about it. They cannot take the wine they've been making at home and move it onto the premises. It says, wine that you produce as a home winemaker is produced under the regulations that apply to wine made for personal or family use. You may never sell that wine or offer it for sale. Additionally, wine that you produce as a home winemaker may not be stored on bonded wine premises. So that's a pretty catchy thing there. I bet you there's some people in a violation of that regulation. I need to take a sip of wine. Excuse me.
That little brief silence is for sale if you'd like to purchase advertising.
Yeah. Yeah. So I got myself a California Merlot I'm sipping on tonight. Not a real good California Merlot, if I may say so. Here, another question. I am a home winemaker, and I'm applying for a permit to operate a winery. Before my application and bond are approved, is there a way for me to make wine that I will be allowed to sell at the new bonded wine premises? And this is what these people who we've talked to have to follow. A home winemaker that is planning to become the proprietor of a newly established bonded winery and wishes to have a starting wine inventory can have wine produced by an existing fully qualified bonded winery under a custom crush arrangement. And it explains custom crush arrangements in previous paragraphs in this section. I'm not going to get into that. Fully qualified bonded winery. Okay. When the applications and bond for the new winery are approved, the wine produced by the bonded winery B, or the second one, for the new winery can be transferred in bond to the new winery's established premises, and that wine may be sold or offered for sale. Okay. So it has to, you can't do it until you are fully bonded. How do I become a bonded wine premises? Now, let me read you this paragraph. Federal law requires that anyone wishing to conduct wine operations other than a home winemaker must first establish premises, obtain a bond, and receive permission from the Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau, the TTB. In addition, law requires that anyone wishing to produce or blend wine in the United States must first obtain a federal basic permit from TTB. So, if you're a home winemaker and you want to sell wine, you cannot take the wine you're making and move it onto a premises. You cannot crush or do anything until you become bonded and receive a federal basic permit. But the federal basic permit just takes, it's really pretty simple. You can get this online. It's just a very, it's just a matter of steps and stuff like that. And you need to be bonded. Now, you hear this bonded. Bonded is simply a bond. And I don't know if you're familiar, most people are familiar with a bond. I mean, a bond is you pay a little bit of money for a bond that says that if anything happens, this money will be paid to take care of whatever happens. Most, the states require different amounts of bonds. The federal government requires different amounts of bonds. And it just depends on what operations you're doing and what it is. But all it takes is getting a bond. Is just go down to, your bonding companies, and there's bonding companies in every city and every town all around the country. And you go to your bonding company and you say, I need bonds. I need a bond for this and this and this and this. And they will check and see who's supplying them and what is available. And they say, okay, if you, you know, say you need a $5,000 bond, they say, okay, this $5,000 bond is going to cost you $120 a year. So you pay your $120 a year, you get your bond. You are then bonded. And that's all that is required to be bonded. You have to fill out your paperwork, obviously, and it's usually 3 or 4 pages of paperwork. And it just, you know, basically states that, you know, I am of good character and I'm not going to, you know, do anything that's illegal, or I'm not going to do anything that's bad. And you get your bond. And so that's it. That and a federal basic permit is all you need to start a winery. So if you're a home winemaker and you want to start selling wine, then get yourself a bond and get a qualified bond place. And it's, you know, what that's going to do now is it's going to start putting you under federal regulations. You're going to have to start paying taxes, because once you get your federal basic permit, that's going to mean that you're going to start paying taxes. And there are taxes. There are federal taxes and there are state taxes in almost every state. I don't know of any state that doesn't have a winery tax. The federal tax, you can, depending on what size of the winery it is, if you're a small winery, they give you a major break so that you can don't have to pay a tremendous amount, but you still have to pay tax to the federal government. But they're collecting it from every winery in this country, so they do get themselves a chunk of change every year. You can pay your federal taxes either every 2 weeks or every 3 months, every 6 months, or every 3 months, every 6 months, or every year. There's no monthly thing on, but every 2 weeks, every 3 months, every 6 months, or every year. So depending on what size of operations and how much money you want to write a check to the federal government for whatever amount, then you can decide what you want to do with that. But and then your state taxes, usually monthly on those, and that's all it takes. You're bonded. When they say transfer in bond, that just simply means that the bond is applied to transfer these things around. If you receive any wine, if you look on boxes in wine shops and stores like that, you will see some of the tags you'll see transferred in bond or stuff like that. And that's all that simply means is that the bond applied so they can transfer. And, you know, that's it. The wine making kits, you've seen those around. A lot of people have seen those. A lot of people have heard of those. Does TTB regulate the production of home winemaking kits? No, they do not. The TTB has no control over those. Winemaking kits typically contain a concentrate, yeast, juice, acid, sulfites, wood chips, enough to make a wine. And since the kits are unfermented raw materials, TTB doesn't control them because their alcohol is their, in their name, not juice. If you use to make it at home, there's nothing, you know, completely legal and all that. They don't endorse it or certify it, though. If you're doing a home winemaking kit and it turns out terrible or something like that, you can't run to the TTB and complain about the company you bought it from for false advertising or anything else, because they don't have any control over it until it's fermented and you're doing that. TTB laws do fall into place on these winemaking kits and places once they start turning into wine. But then again, we go back to the individuals doing a lot of individuals. I've talked about wineries. There's a big one in Alaska that does home winemaking kits and do that. There's more information on that. If you're doing winemaking kits and want to know more information, you can always go to the uh, CTB website and look up winemaking kits. They'll tell you all about it there. I'm going to see if I can't get guests next week. I'm going to see if I can't get a hold of Joy, Joy of Wine, and see if she can't be a guest. I'm also, it's about time we start getting a hold of Tennessee and see if we can't get some guests from Tennessee, because that's our next state on our list of wines. And so if not, and I should be able to get some guests, but if not, we can always jump back and cover some more stuff on the Trade and Tax Bureau. I mean, it's really a big site. There's a lot of information, awful lot of information on here. Pages and pages and pages. It has to be an enormous site because of all the different things that they offer. And this is just in the wine section alone. The stuff in the wine section, it just goes on for pages and pages. And they have a distilled spirit section. They have beer section. They have other alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, arms, and ammunition. A whole section on that, too, which falls under the TTB. So all this stuff is on this website. If you want to check it out, ttb.gov. It's as simple as that. TTB, as in boy, .gov. And that's the Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau from the U.S. Department of Treasury, which controls all this stuff that you do and everything else that basically happens in this country.
Right. Yep. Pretty much. That's it. Wow. Okay, so I put those down for possibly next week. Not real sure yet, but we'll be updating the next schedule when we find out more. And yep. I'm sure you'll be on Facebook with if we have any guests or anything coming up, so that'll be cool.
Yeah, I'll keep it informed on what's going on there.
Yep, that's usually my first step before I post a new show is I check the Facebook page and see if you have anything.
That's a wise thing.
Yeah, never know, never know.
Never know.
Okay, I guess other than what's going on this weekend, I guess do you have any other information for the last 3 minutes? Oh, what do we have? 2 minutes, less than 2 minutes. Wow. If not, I'll go ahead and run. You have a wine fest Saturday.
We have a wine fest.
Yes. Yep. That is April the 13th, 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. at the Florida State's Winery. Standby. We'll be right back in about a minute.
Coming up this Saturday at Florida State's Winery, it's Wine Fest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Enjoy live music, have a little fun, and shop our vendors providing unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. Participate in an informative wine tasting with wine expert and show host, Ron. Sample some of Florida Estates Winery's world-class wines. Shopping is always fun, and Wine Fest is a great way to pick up unique gift items. Come out to Florida Estates Winery and enjoy the weekend with us. Listen to live music and shop under the giant oak trees while enjoying a glass of your favorite wine. This is a family event, and pets are welcome at Florida Estates Winery. See you there. Florida Estates Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call 813-996-2113 or email corp@flewn.com. That's C-O-R-P at F-L-E-W-N.com for more information. Florida Estates Winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Yeah. There you go. And don't forget, about a month away from today, Sunday, May the 12th, is Mother's Day. And what a great, thing to think about and quit putting it off until Saturday, May the 11th. You can start shopping now, and it'll That's be right. Great to shop at Florida State's Winery this Saturday during the Wine Fest. There's going to be plenty of vendors out there, some unique items always out there, and some stuff you've heard before, like Avon's going to be out there, and what else? Sassy Servers, those are very interesting, and You're going to have all kinds of candles and just some great gift items out there. So stop by, pick up some cannolis while you're out there, and enjoy visiting the vendors and more. Shopping is always fun, and it's a great chance to pick up unique gifts. Like I said, Mother's Day, May 12th, Sunday, now I goofed it up again? Yeah, May 12th, Sunday. And so you definitely want to come out and enjoy the weekend at Florida State's Winery, 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. There in Land O'Lakes. So stop by and tell them you heard about it on during the All About Wine show. And after they look at you kind of funny, they'll go, hey, okay. But anyway, you can – so what else – if you visit that time or any other time, you're open 7 days a week till 6 p.m.? 6 p.m. And I was looking at the other thing. You have a wine class on Sunday. Wow.
No, we don't.
Don't forget. Oh, wine fest. Okay, so it's on here.
Yeah, the class on Sunday is a conflict, so we're canceling it.
Oh, okay. No wine class. So if you're planning on that one, no wine class this Sunday, the 14th. But definitely wine fest on the 13th. Be sure to stop by and put a little something in the tip jar, whatever you can. Let's see. Last month's tip jar was for Grandma's Girls Making Strides Against Breast Cancer. You raised over $200 for a great cause. Thanks to everybody for stopping by for that. This month, the tip jar goes to the Pasco Pediatric Association. It is a great local group that helps children, and they partner with Pasco County school nurses, educators, health department, local hospitals, pediatricians, and many others, professionals serving the children. And so stop by the winery and offer something in the tip jar to go towards the Pasco Pediatric Association this month, and really appreciate it. So
yep.
Do that, and it'd be great. 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. daily, except major holidays. And call them, 813-996-2113 for more information. So we're all good. Next week, it will be April the 18th. We will be on again live at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And join us then for another informative and educational show that is all about wine right here on Blog Talk Radio. And thank you all for tuning in. Really appreciate it. It is just after 8 p.m. now. And, just after. So yeah. We'll go ahead and close the show. And thanks again, and we appreciate it. And if you have any last comments, we'll go ahead and run the ending, and we'll see you all next week. Thank you.
Thank you all for tuning in. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And
this concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/AllAboutWineBTR. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly, and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter.
Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.